Okay, so is this working?
Yes.
Okay, great. So I've been asked to remind everyone that we're skipping the break, in case you couldn't tell, and lunch will be directly after my speech, so no pressure. Good morning, I'm Brett Smith. I'm the licensing compliance engineer at the Free Software Foundation. It's a bunch of big scary words that I tie together to try to get the corporate lawyers to pay more attention to me because they don't like it when you have cute titles like licensing guru or whatever. Yeah, when I actually told my mom that I got this job, she's like, you know, there are so many job titles these days that have like engineer in them or someone has to be a manager of something or other. And I tried to explain to her that, well, yeah, she was actually right. My job has nothing to do with engineering. So I know I can recognize a lot of faces here from previous years. You probably saw Dave Turner. He moved to New York to work directly on free software. He's hacking on something called the Open Planning Project. I took his job because I was helping out answering licensing questions. I've been around for a few years too, if you've paid very close attention. I started as a webmaster several years back, had a couple of internships, and then I was volunteering to help Dave answer licensing questions from the public, and then he left and I took his job. So the compliance lab is sort of this vague concept that I'm kind of in charge of, with Peter's help, of course. So since its inception, or pretty close at least, since around 1992, the Free Software Foundation has provided a number of services to the broad free software community to help them deal with licensing issues on various different fronts. One of the very classic examples is that we accept copyright assignments for various GNU projects, and then later on, that means we can go and enforce the license if we catch people violating it. That means if we need to make some sort of change to the licensing in the program, that's very straightforward to do. You've probably heard about that in the past. We answer licensing questions from the general public. So anybody can just email us at licensing@fsf.org. It's a very well-advertised address. We'll take just about any question. We get a lot of questions about Wikipedia because they're using the free documentation license. So people look at the license, see our address on it, mail us, and be like, there's no hints. So you get a question that says, can I use the picture? Is it true that I can use the picture of James Monroe in my book? And I'm like, I'm pretty sure there's more than one picture of James Monroe in existence. I know he's not the most popular U.S. president, but
we get questions about the FSF at Wikipedia, too, so.
Oh, OK, great. we're even then. I feel better now. Thank you. Sorry, one sec.
So Jerry's not here yet, so you feel free to keep on going until
you're okay. Normal time. I've been asked to slow down and stall lunch. OK. Now there's really no pressure. Okay, so where were we? So copyright assignments, enforcement, answering questions about licensing. There are a couple of one-off things that will come up occasionally. For example, we'll get requests to relicense a certain piece of GNU software, usually a library that we've released under the GPL. People will ask us, can you release that under the LGPL, please, so I can use it in my proprietary software? And we'll tell them no and make them go away. But occasionally we get a legitimate request from a free software developer who really has a need for it, and then I'll evaluate that and see, well, what are the alternatives available? What licensing schemes are those under? And we'll make a decision. That's mostly Richard Stallman's doing, but I sort of help him figure out what the landscape really looks like. And then, of course, the big one-off project, and I'm going to be the first one to say this word this morning, so GPL v3. Who's made a comment instead? Who's commented on the license? I've read your comment. I don't remember which one is yours, but I read it. All 600 of them or so that we've gotten since the publication of the second draft, those have all been my responsibility to kind of go through and synthesize and again present to Richard Stallman and let him help him see sort of what the issues are and sort of maybe what we might want to tackle for the next draft. So the compliance lab is a lot of things, and we decided to formalize it and start thinking about it as its own sub-entity around late 2001, because we realized that all these jobs are very correlated. You know, the copyright assignment and the enforcement are very tightly knit, because if we don't have the copyrights for a particular program, can't enforce the license. If we know what people are asking about, that can help us inform what should be going on with GPLv3, that sort of thing. And so when I came into this job, I felt like it was kind of unfortunate, because a lot of people seem to think of the compliance lab as just the thing that does GPL enforcement. And I can understand why that is, because it's one of the more unique roles we play within the community. There are other forums that, you know, will purport at least to help you answer your licensing questions, some of them more reliably than others. There are other places that will take your copyright assignments, like the Apache Software Foundation, and then recently the Software Freedom Conservancy. So enforcement definitely is one of the more unique things we do, but it's not the only thing, and that's the message I'd sort of like to get across today and then throughout the next year, especially since the enforcement is also a little secretive. We don't give names. I'm not going to tell you who's violating the GPL in the past year or so. I'm not going to, you know, talk about, I don't know, you know, all the dirty secrets of the industry or anything like that. Say, I'm sorry?
Can you give us a ballpark of the number of kind of like enforcement?
Sure. That's an interesting question, because actually I'll let that seg into the next part of my speech and then we'll go from there. So I'll go ahead and talk about violations some, because although I wish people knew more about the other stuff, I realize, like I said, it's one of the more unique things we do. And I'm not really sure how good of a idea people have of how enforcement works. How many of you would say that you have a relatively strong understanding of how to go about enforcement? Yeah, nobody's willing to seriously raise their hand except the previous manager of the compliance lab. Everybody else is kind of like, okay. So I'll give a brief overview. You can think of violations as sort of having a life cycle. So I don't know about the rest of you, but in elementary school, I learned about the life cycle of the butterfly, and it had these very four nice, clean, distinct stages. From you start with an egg, and then you have the larva, which is the caterpillar, basically, and then it goes into the cocoon, and then you have an adult. So nice four distinct stages, and it's very linear, and if we take, you know, this framework and just erase all the words, we can figure out what violations look like. So this is going to make sense, I promise. Every violation starts with a report. Most of these are emailed to me directly from the general public. We have a page on our website that says, if you think you found a license violation, here's this questionnaire, please fill it out. Send it to us, and then we'll take appropriate action. There's an email address at the bottom. Most of the people skip the questionnaire, just go to the email address, and then, you know, send us whatever they think is convenient. And usually, sure enough, that's enough for us to work with. So that works out pretty well. The information I need from a report is I need to know who's violating the GPL. That's usually pretty relatively straightforward to figure out. I need to know what software is involved, and I need to know exactly how they're violating the license. Figuring out what software is involved, it depends on the case. For example, I'll use wireless routers as an example. A lot of them have free software underneath. Oftentimes, you can go to the manufacturer's website, and there will be firmware downloads available for the router. So I can just download the firmware and start poking at it with various utilities that I'm not going to name, because I don't want to give out all my secrets. This is being recorded, so you know. and then, sure enough, there'll be the version line and the copyright line for glibc. Okay, there's our violation, or at least the software. Sometimes I can't always get software directly out of the firmware. Sometimes it's some really bizarre proprietary image format that I just can't figure out. Sometimes if if there's a firmware blob that has LZMA compressed data in it, it's very difficult to get the LZMA compressed data out because there's no magic number that tells you, here's where it starts and here's where it ends. No, you just, so you can try to brute force it, but that's about it. If anybody knows anything better, please let me know. That would be nice. And then, so if I can't get the software directly out of a firmware image or something like that, I'll probably talk to the reporter and ask, can you get shell access to the device? Maybe they can. They can prepare me a transcript, show me, you know, what's in bin, what's in user bin, what's in user s bin, what's in lib. Maybe run strings on some of it, maybe check the versions of some of it to prove that it's the FSF copyrighted software. And then they'll send me back, and that kind of transcript will be enough. Already we're starting to see a theme that runs throughout this entire process, which is that every case is different. That they all have these same general stages, but exactly what happens in each of them will vary widely between them, depending on just the circumstances of the violation. The last thing I need to know is how they're violating the license. The most common type of violation, actually, there's basically a tie, either, or usually both, you know, usually they both violate by not providing source and by not including a copy of the license. Because most violations aren't malicious, they're just people aren't paying attention to the fact that they're using GPL software and that that has requirements to go along with it. So that's the report. Once I have all the evidence, the next stage, the larva stage of the violation, is the initial contact with the violator.
Contact.
Okay. I'm really being tortured here. Initial contact with the violator, I'll start by going to the web page and looking for email addresses. I'll look for the most specific thing I can find, like the CTO or a legal contact. Barring that, maybe some developers, can't get that, then I'll subject myself to, you know, the general technical support address or something like that, and send email. If I don't get a response in 2 weeks, then I start calling on the phone. And if that doesn't work, then I start faxing people and sending postal letters. And if that doesn't work, then I have to contact our lawyers at the Software Freedom Law Center and ask them to send a letter. And then if that doesn't work, it starts getting really nasty. So again, it depends. And it's very it can be very frustrating if you don't get a response, because I can't just ping flood them, you know. Here's my email, and here's my letter, and here's my fax, and here's my phone call, and why haven't you answered me yet after, you know, 2 days? I have to send the email, wait a couple weeks, then I call them, wait a week, fax them, wait another couple weeks, talk to the lawyers, wait another couple weeks. It can go on for a while, unfortunately, without feeling like anything has actually happened, because they haven't gotten back to you yet. Again, there's another way that every situation is different. The pupa stage is the negotiation. Once we finally do get word back from the violator, we start talking about how to bring them into compliance. Oftentimes when I say negotiation, some people get the mistaken impression that, you know, we're going to talk about what requirements of the GPL that I'm going to require them to follow and which ones I'm going to let them ignore. That's not how it works. The terms of the GPL are not up for negotiation. What we do negotiate is, normally, you know, this is the first time they've actually read the GPL, amazingly enough. So they'll have questions about exactly how they can fulfill their requirements. They'll ask, you know, well, if we put the source up on this web page, is that good enough? And then I have to explain, well, no, because you're shipping boxes, and so how do people with the boxes find out about the web page? And they're like, oh, we'll print the address of the web page in the box. I'm like, no, that's not good enough either. And so we'll have a few rounds of that. Then, you know, they'll prepare the source, and I'll ask them to see a copy of the source to make sure they got it right. And sure enough, they'll be missing a couple of programs, so I'll mail them about that. And then they'll send it to me again, and it won't have the configuration files that I need to actually compile the right version of the software, so I talk to them about that. So it can go on. This stage can also go on for a while. How long it goes on depends basically on how cooperative the violator is. Some of them are extremely cooperative. We can have the entire thing open and closed in a couple weeks. Others are less so, and it can drag on for a very long time. But the reason it drags on for a long time is because after we're done, they should be in compliance. And that's the last stage. There are only a couple more things we have to take care of once we get to this point. The first is, if they're a commercial violator, we'll ask them to pay us for the time we spent on their violation, which gives them incentive to make it shorter. And we point that out to them at the beginning, but they don't always really seem to care. So we'll ask them to pay us, and then afterwards we'll restore their rights, because under GPL, once you violate the license, you lose it completely. And so once we've determined that they are, in fact, back in compliance, we will formally restore those rights so that they know they're in the clear, as long as they stay within the rules of the GPL. So what kind of compliance cases have we been seeing recently? We had a small bump with GNU and Linux distributions. It became really popular for a while there, and it still is for a bit, to make your own GNU and Linux distribution, which is really cool. Some of them kind of fudged around the lines of the requirement to provide source. People would mail them and be like, I would like the source for your distribution. And they're like, oh, you know, we just took such and such distribution, added a couple packages, here's the source for that. For everything else, go back upstream and go get that. That's not exactly acceptable. So I've had to kind of iron that out. Everybody's been very friendly about it. We've been able to get things taken care of. And this issue is getting more attention now. Some of the upstream, the popular upstream distributors, are trying to figure out ways to make this easier for their derivatives so that it doesn't feel like this huge burdensome requirement. And so that combination of awareness and better solutions, I think, will help get this taken care of. The biggest thing we've seen is, as usual, there are a lot of violations in the embedded space. Not particularly surprising, but we're starting to see our reach kind of expand. So earlier, it was things that you would typically think about as including free software, like I mentioned before, wireless routers. But now it's expanding into wireless routers that you install on top of a mountain rather than under your desk, or portable media players, or televisions, or mobile phones is where we're starting to see some interesting, you know, violations that it's going to be interesting to watch how those play out in the negotiation phase. And it's nice that we're spreading out, because those companies are starting to realize that, how to put this, that they're not alone in this. Some of these companies, now that we're getting to the people who make televisions, are like, well, we knew we didn't put that software in there. So they start contacting their providers, the people who make the silicon that they put in the television, and are like, did you include this such and such software? And they're like, oh yeah. And they're like, you could have told us that we have GPL obligations. I'm sorry, I'm really rushed for time.
Oh, okay, no problem.
And that's really great, because that means that, you know, we're not just building awareness with the last mile manufacturers who put the thing in the box and put it on the shelf for you to buy. We're building up awareness with more and more of the entire channel that's building these devices for the consumer. And that's going to have really nice effects, because when upstream comes into compliance, that makes it much easier for everybody downstream to come into compliance. I talked about how, you know, people think of the compliance lab as just enforcing the GPL, and now I did this very quick talk about how we enforce the GPL. But the way that we're building awareness about compliance actually plays in well to sort of the overarching goal for the compliance lab over the next year or two, which is to build more awareness with everyone in the community about who we are and what we do. I want you all to go out and make more work for me. I want you, if you see people asking licensing questions, let them know that they can, you know, email licensing@fsf.org with their question, and I'll answer it for them. If you see violations, let me know. And of course, as we move into GPL v3, pretty soon here we're going to be busy with advocating the license, you know, not just talking about what should be in the license. That discussion is going to be over hopefully soon. So once we come into the advocacy period, we're going to have to do a lot of more education. We're going to have to update the FAQ. We're going to have to update the license list that says what's compatible with what license. And I'm going to need a lot of help with that. So if you'd like to help volunteer with that, please let me know. I would definitely appreciate it. And there's going to be a lot of exciting, interesting work to be done over the next year. Yeah, and now we're supposed to break for lunch. I'm sorry this speech is so lopsided. Like I said, the timing issues were kind of weird. So we'll go ahead and break for lunch. If anybody has any questions or wants to get in touch with me, I'll just be up here.
You didn't answer the question about how ballpark comes out.
Oh, so sorry, right. Yeah, thank you. So really quick, ballpark violations. So the thing about this is while they all have this same, they go through these phases, different violations will have different shapes. So like sometimes the report will be really quick because I can download the firmware and I can see very easily what software is in it. And then I'll make the initial contact and that'll go really quickly. A lawyer will get back to me really fast. And then the negotiation will kind of go on for a while because they're not entirely sure what they actually have in their product or whatever. But eventually they come into compliance and that's pretty reasonable. Other times, sometimes the report drags on because I can't figure out whether or not there's any FSF copyrighted software in there. And that's important because I can't really do anything if there's not, at least not directly. And then the initial contact will wear on because they send me to the dreaded anonymous voicemail box. I call this company, I explain my concerns to them, and the reception is like, sure, I'll put you in touch with the right person right away, just one moment. So, you know, the line rings a couple more times, the robot picks up, the person you have tried to reach is not available, please leave a message. I'm like, this is no name, no extension, no way to actually contact this person who's supposedly responsible, so I have to hang up, call the receptionist back, be like, hi, we just spoke. Who did you actually try to put me in touch with? And then, once again, who knows how long the negotiation goes on, and then compliance comes. So in terms of new cases that are coming in, I receive about 20 to 30 reports a month. Most of those are not directly legitimate, i.e., someone selling the software on eBay. That's okay. Don't panic. other times, there won't be any FSF copyrighted software, and I'll have to pass it on to somebody else who can maybe do something about it. And then other times, you know, I confirm the violation, and then it goes into this process. And then some, I've been able, there was one time I opened and closed a violation in just the course of a month, and then there was another one that was 2 months. And then some of these actually run on for years, which I'm not happy about, but they've got a lot of products with a lot of free software in them, and so it can take a while to get everything ironed out. So, and the number of cases I'm actively working on at any given time, it can be in flux. It seems to hang around 30 because I have trouble dealing with any more at any given time, but that's about the ballpark. And so lots of little ones and then lots of big ones at the same time running in parallel. So there was that question. I don't think there's anything else outstanding, and we're supposed to break for lunch. Yes?